Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
The other reason I use that USDA data is it's not just domestic. I can use trade data to say something about foreign demand for U.S. beef, pork, and chicken products. And in July, foreign demand was about 1% lower than it was in June for U.S. beef, but up over 20% compared to the prior year. So that one stands out big as, you know, beef exports have been hitting a wall, so to speak, because of affordability challenges. Maybe that's better than it was the year before.
K-State livestock economist Glenn Tonser.
Export demand for U.S. pork in July was 10% better than June, and chicken demand, or broiler demand more narrowly the way it's measured here, was down about 3% compared to the prior June. So we have a more mixed bag across the three species when it comes to foreign demand, and that reflects the fact that global supplies vary more across these three meats. The relative, you know, percentage of trade that comes from the U.S. varies across these three meats and so forth.
This is Agriculture Today.
My colleagues and I remain squarely focused on achieving our dual mandate goals of maximum employment and stable prices for the benefit of the American people.
On Wednesday, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell.
Our economy is strong overall and has made significant progress toward our goals over the past 2 years. The labor market has cooled from its formerly overheated state. Inflation has eased substantially from a peak of 7% to an estimated 2.2% as of August. We're committed to maintaining our economy's strength by supporting maximum employment and returning inflation to our 2% goal. Today, the Federal Open Market Committee decided to reduce the degree of policy restraint by lowering our policy interest rate by a half percentage point. This decision reflects our growing confidence that with an appropriate recalibration of our policy stance, strength in the labor market can be maintained in a context of moderate growth and inflation moving sustainably down to 2%. We also decided to continue to reduce our securities holdings. I will have more to say about monetary policy after briefly reviewing economic developments.
With interest rates at 23-year highs and after 4 years, a cut.
Recent indicators suggest that economic activity has continued to expand at a solid pace. GDP rose at an annual rate of 2.2% in the first half of the year, and available data point to a roughly similar pace of growth this quarter. Growth of consumer spending has remained resilient, and investment in equipment and intangibles has picked up from its anemic pace last year. In the housing sector, investment fell back in the second quarter after rising strongly in the first. Improving supply conditions have supported resilient demand and the strong performance of the U.S. economy over the past year. In our summary of economic projections, committee participants generally expect GDP growth to remain solid, with a median projection of 2% over the next few years. In the labor market, conditions have continued to cool. Payroll job gains averaged 116,000 per month over the past 3 months, a notable step down from the pace seen earlier in the year. The unemployment rate has moved up but remains low at 4.2%. Nominal wage growth has eased over the past year, and the jobs-to-workers gap has narrowed. Overall, a broad set of indicators suggests that conditions in the labor market are now less tight than just before the pandemic in 2019. The labor market is not a source of elevated inflationary pressures. The median projection for the unemployment rate in the SEP is 4.4% at the end of this year, 0.4 higher than projected in June. Inflation has eased notably over the past 2 years, but remains above our longer-run goal of 2%. Estimates based on the Consumer Price Index and other data indicate that total PCE prices rose 2.2% over the 12 months ending in August, and that excluding the volatile food and energy categories, core PCE prices rose 2.7%. Longer-term inflation expectations appear to remain well-anchored, as reflected in a broad range of surveys of households, businesses, and forecasters, as well as measures from financial markets. The median projection in the SEP for total PCE inflation is 2.3% this year and 2.1% next year, somewhat lower than projected in June. Thereafter, the median projection is 2%.
Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The freedom of it.
Marvin Sanderlin is a Stanton, Tennessee farmer on crop insurance and the community.
You pretty well work at your own pace. The reward of being a good steward of the land, how you are rewarded with a big crop for your toil and labor through the year. That's the most rewarding thing, that see that, you know, the land has been left to us to be a good steward of it, and we take care of it, and he rewards us with a good crop and a good living. And you depend on Mother Nature and the good Lord to send you a rain when you need it. That's the biggest gamble. I would say that it's very important to have crop insurance, because there's so many people, livelihoods depend on our livelihood. The folks that works at the seed stores, the folks that work at the restaurants in town, the local feed stores, all those people are directly tied to us. And if we don't have a safety net to keep us out here on the land to make a decent living, so we can spend that dollar in the stores there in town, at the implement dealers, the fertilizer places, you know, it would be a disaster if you didn't have the crop insurance. So we did have a year like 1980, when, you know, it was a nationwide drought. It would be just it would throw the country in almost a recession. You know, if crop insurance didn't come in to help put income back in our pocket to pay the bankers and all those people. Crop insurance is a good tool to have in the toolbox.
From a farmer to a crop insurance agent in Maryland and Delaware, Jules Hendricks on the importance of crop insurance.
I have a background in agriculture with a master's degree in horticulture and agronomy. So when I moved to the Eastern Shore of Maryland, I wanted to be involved in the ag community. There's something special about the crop insurance realm that I took to. I loved how you worked directly with family farms. There's still not only just deep roots of agriculture here, but agriculture all around us. So whenever there's a big disaster, it's always a gut-wrenching feeling. One is, you know, that a farmer is experiencing, you know, a loss of a crop that they have put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into. And the feeling that I get as an agent when I can see that the farmer can breathe again after understanding where, what has happened, but that they have understood that they have chosen the right coverage to say, okay, I can get up, I can make this work, I can do another day and still, you know, make sure that I am farming tomorrow and my generations from now are still farming. I want to sit and beg my congressmen and women to understand, really understand the importance of agriculture in this area, not only because it's our roots and where we've always been, but it's because it's going to be such an important part of our future here. And understand that with changes in climate and changes in legislation and changes in farming dynamics, that the crop insurance policy or crop insurance policies and options are such an important aspect in the whole picture of a successful agricultural realm.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
It would be premature for me to say what the quality is going to be like.
Mark Brown is Director of Field Services with Lubbock-based Plains Cotton Growers.
I was very concerned about that last year, and we ended up with pretty good quality out here on the High Plains throughout the season. And I certainly hope that's going to be the case this year. But, you know, the people that have been out in the fields, especially on the dryland crop, realize how stressed that crop was during much of August. August certainly was not kind to the High Plains area for the 2024 growing season. And with very warm nights and with a lot of fields that stressed, it is very possible that we could see a lot of variability in our quality this year. You know, typically when we see drought-stressed cotton, we could be looking at things such as high mic and a lower staple length. And then when we see fields that run out of gas at the end of the season and get drought-stressed at the very end before they're able to put down all the cellulose on those individual fibers, then we can actually see some low micronair cotton. So it's going to be very interesting to see how things shake out. But hopefully, as I mentioned, it will be similar to last year, and we'll be pleasantly surprised with the quality reports that we receive out here on the High Plains.
Says when it comes to a farm bill, even if you think your elected official knows you personally, you need to make a phone call.
You know, it's so important that they hear from their constituents, and we can go up there as an organization, and I think we can make a large impact. And we are, in fact, working hard and doing that. But it makes also so much impact to get individual calls or text messages from their constituents. And I heard just this morning at a meeting that I was attending, there was a young man talking to me and asking about contacting his congressman. And he was saying that he's got a young family and he's getting started in farming. And he's also working a full-time job. And he's concerned that with the price supports that he has today, that he's not going to be able to break into farming adequately and take over the operation that has been in his family for four generations. So I think whenever these congressmen hear stories such as this, I think it really resonates with them. And I do know that our congressmen here on the High Plains are in tune with what's going on, but it also helps them to see what the need is out in the countryside and to actually kind of tally the number of people that are actually contacting their offices and requesting assistance. And that gives them standing to go and talk to the committees that are involved with the Farm Bill and with looking at possible stopgap support in between the time that the next Farm Bill would make any supplemental assistance program, so our payment. And so just really critical that people contact their legislator, and it just takes just one or two sentences to explain. If they need help, we've got what we are advocating for listed out on our website, and we also can text that to producers and give them a list of talking points to help them make a few good, strong points that are important so that we're all giving the same message to our representation.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Our monetary policy actions are guided by our dual mandate to promote maximum employment and stable prices for the American people.
Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell.
For much of the past 3 years, inflation ran well above our 2% goal, and labor market conditions were extremely tight. Our primary focus had been on bringing down inflation, and appropriately so. We are acutely aware that high inflation imposes significant hardship as it erodes purchasing power, especially for those least able to meet the higher costs of essentials, like food, housing, and transportation. Our restrictive monetary policy has helped restore the balance between aggregate supply and demand, easing inflationary pressures and ensuring that inflation expectations remain well anchored. Our patient approach over the past year has paid dividends. Inflation is now much closer to our objective, and we have gained greater confidence that inflation is moving sustainably toward 2%. As inflation has declined and the labor market has cooled, the upside risks to inflation have diminished and the downside risks to employment have increased. We now see the risks to achieving our employment and inflation goals as roughly in balance, and we are attentive to the risks to both sides of our dual mandate. In light of the progress on inflation and the balance of risks, at today's meeting, the committee decided to lower the target range for the federal funds rate by a half percentage point to 4.75% to 5%. This recalibration of our policy stance will help maintain the strength of the economy and the labor market and will continue to enable further progress on inflation as we begin the process of moving toward a more neutral stance. We are not on any preset course. We will continue to make our decisions meeting by meeting. We know that reducing policy restraint too quickly could hinder progress on inflation. At the same time, reducing restraint too slowly could unduly weaken economic activity and employment. In considering additional adjustments to the target range for the federal funds rate, the committee will carefully assess incoming data, the evolving outlook, and the balance of risks. In our SEP, FOMC participants wrote down their individual assessments of an appropriate path for the federal funds rate based on what each participant judges to be the most likely scenario going forward. If the economy evolves as expected, the median participant projects that the appropriate level of the federal funds rate will be 4.4% at the end of this year and 3.4% at the end of 2025. These median projections are lower than in June, consistent with the projections for lower inflation and higher unemployment, as well as the changed balance of risks. These projections, however, are not a committee plan or decision. As the economy evolves, monetary policy will adjust in order to best promote our maximum employment and price stability goals. If the economy remains solid and inflation persists, we can dial back policy restraint more slowly. If the labor market were to weaken unexpectedly or inflation were to fall more quickly than anticipated, we are prepared to respond. Policy is well positioned to deal with the risks and uncertainties that we face in pursuing both sides of our dual mandate. The Fed has been assigned two goals for monetary policy: maximum employment and stable prices. We remain committed to supporting maximum employment, bringing inflation back down to our 2% goal, and keeping longer-term inflation expectations well anchored. Our success in delivering on these goals matters to all Americans. We understand that our actions affect communities, families, and businesses across the country. Everything we do is in service to our public mission. We at the Fed will do everything we can to achieve our maximum employment and price stability goals.
After cutting rates by 50 basis points on Wednesday, it's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
This past week was, I would call it, mixed in the markets.
Kansas State livestock economist Dr. Glenn Tonzer.
Cash futures, boxed beef, we can break down here, and you get a little bit different signals depending on which one of those we quote. You asked first on cash, so USDA AMS called Fed cattle five market area price at 181. That was basically flat for the week, fairly low volume, nothing really to write home about, so to speak there. When you flip over to feeder cattle, even more low volume commentary comes to play. So AMS called the Pratt market steady to $4 higher on very low volume for heavyweights. There were some quotes that were $5 and even $10 per hundredweight higher on light animals, so think 450-pound, you know, very few head. I wouldn't write home about that either because they were on low volume, so you shouldn't overreact to it. But two lots I noted here just for context for listeners was 66 head came in at 781 pounds, priced at 244. A heavier lot was 36 head, weighing 953, came in at 216. Those would be up from the prior week. But again, please note the sum of those two lots I gave you is 100 head, so we're talking low volume in those examples.
But what's happening for feedlot returns?
Going all the way back to 2012, Kevin Duvetter was still on faculty here. Most of our listeners probably remember Kevin. He helped me update and refine and extend these feedlot returns so we both say what they are and what we're projecting them to going forward. I'm highlighting that because there's a long history we can compare back to, not just the current situation. And it's not uncommon that when feeder cattle prices are going up in value, and they're quite a bit higher now than they were a year or 2 years ago, that feedlot margins take a hit. And that is the synthesis of what we're projecting in this exercise. So each month we take focus on feedlot information from the Animal Science Department here. Shout out, thanks to those around the state that do those surveys. That gives me placement weight, sales weight, you know, production kind of stuff. And I mirror that up with market information, so fed cattle, feeder cattle, and then Garden City corn information to back into historical returns. And then I look to the futures market to use some of that to project forward. And the punchline, unfortunately, Shelby, is cattle leaving the yard here in Kansas from September all the way out through this coming April, I'm projecting will be at a loss. Now, the magnitude of that loss varies quite a bit. It exceeds $300 a couple months right at the turn of the year. At the moment, cattle leaving, steers specifically, leaving in January are projected to have over a $300 loss. It's important to know what's behind my calculations there is I'm saying you paid the cash market for feeder cattle, roughly 7 months before then, because these are cattle leaving the yard in January. You take the negotiated price that's available in Kansas, specifically expected to be available here because we're using the futures market, historic basis, and then you take basically what you got to pay for grain as you go. So we, you know, each month we buy more grain to feed these animals, so roughly 1,400, 1,450 pounds. And when you do that, if you follow my verbal overview, there's no risk management place. So you didn't put anything in place to protect yourself against either a rise in feeder cattle or a rise in corn prices, nor a decline in fed cattle prices. So you can do better than this if had you protected against declines specifically on fed cattle prices, but this is sort of a cash-to-cash projection, and it suggests feedlots that are in a cash-to-cash situation are going to be losing money the next several months. That's why I made the comment a few minutes ago that feeder cattle prices have, I don't like the term ceiling, but there definitely is downward pressure on prices from the buyers given the margins that feedlots are facing.
This is all good, but it comes down to consumer demand. And that didn't look too good.
So there was lots of measures, including this one, that said demand was slipping as 23 concluded. Hopefully, to this point, July 23 was one of the low spots, and therefore when you're a year later, it looks better if you've grown some. And that's what it looks like was the case for July of 24. I know, well, we're sitting here in September, but sometimes you interject these things as, you know, we look back at data as it comes in, and it's nice to confirm per this metric that July data suggests July demand was pretty good.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
So HB4 is a gene editor, a GMO wheat that has been deregulated in the United States for consumption.
Chandler Gould is CEO, National Association of Wheat Growers.
I'm going to be very clear. It's just deregulated for consumption from a company, Biocrest, from Argentina. And for NOG and the wheat growers, this is a huge win. And it's because, you know, corn and soy have been able to take advantage of gene innovation and gene technology, you know, basically since the 80s. And if you think back 25 years ago when I started working in agriculture policy, you didn't have 72-day corn and you didn't have corn growing on the Canadian border, and you do now. And so by having this drought-tolerant wheat being deregulated for consumption, we're really hoping that this opens the pathways for cultivation at some point here in the United States. We continue to lose acreage in the wheat industry here, and in order for us to continue to be competitive against our other commodities here domestically and to help us combat the continuing changing weather patterns, this is a big win. Now, I also want to just tag that on there, though. We are very aware, though, that we have to make sure that we have the consumer's confidence in this, as well as our trading partners on the Asian Pacific Rim and Europe. So it's not a done deal, but we're definitely moving in the right direction to help narrow that gap between corn, soy, and wheat so we can continue to be a profitable and competitive commodity.
He says the U.S. doesn't have to be the guinea pig.
It is. Actually, it has been being grown in Argentina. And so, you know, we can let them see how they, you know, work with a biotech wheat and what are they going to do with their trading partners that will accept it and the ones that won't. So hopefully we won't have to reinvent the wheel if and when cultivation is approved here in the United States.
But does this underscore the importance of research and innovation for the industry?
Look at the last two or three years where we have had major drought, whether it was in the Texas Panhandle, Oklahoma, Kansas, our largest wheat production state in NOG, had a two or three year drought there. And so this drought tolerance is going to be able to help us, you know, maintain those acres and continue to be competitive and hopefully turn a profit. But, you know, that profit is also backed up if we get a farm bill in there to help us with some of that risk management, whether it be on the revenue or production side. And so, you know, this is all working together. We have to have a risk management tool. We need to make sure that we continue to keep open markets and also have the innovation that we can be competitive when it comes to other commodities here in the U.S. And then, you know, climate change or erratic weather patterns, whichever one of those two words makes you feel more comfortable. But the weather's going nuts out there, and we need to be able to combat it and continue to move in a profit direction.
And speaking of wheat, Brad Rippey with USDA.
As of September 15th, 14% of the winter wheat acreage has been planted. That is slightly ahead of the five-year average of 13%. Last year at this time, we were also at 13% planted. We have not seen any acres yet planted in California. That's normal for this time of year. It goes in later there. Also, no acreage planted in Illinois. That's just 1 point behind the five-year average. And then all the way up to 43% complete in Washington State. Colorado leads the Great Plains states with 35% of the acreage planted. We are continuing to watch favorable dryness across all three main regions. The lower Midwest, the Great Plains, and the Northwest all have pockets of dryness or drought. We're not seeing any substantial planting delays at this point, but we will continue to have to watch, as producers can sometimes be a little reluctant to plant into dry and dusty soils. One sign of that might be Oklahoma, 6% planted by September 15th. The five-year average planting progress is typically 10%.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
For the next one or two, I would say hold on and don't incur any additional expenses. Try to be as thrifty as you possibly can, because other than cattle, I don't see any bright spots.
Dr. Joe Outlaw, co-director of the Ag and Food Policy Center at Texas A&M.
The good news is economists are really good at being wrong. And so I'll tell you that I don't know what'll do it. I don't know why it'll happen, but within the next 4 years, the crop market will turn around. And it happens all the time. We generally in this country have periods of 2 to 3 years of great prices, which we had recently, followed by 2 to 3 years of terrible prices, which we're living with right now. And then it changes around because of war or disease or pandemic or you name it, drought. Things happen around the world that will change it. And I expect that to happen this time.